UK government might have shut down?
Let's end this shutdown right now. Let's put people back to work.
Listen, there's never been a president in our history that did not negotiate over the debt limit. Never. Not once.
But you can count on us. Welcome to News One Now with Roland Martin.
Good morning. I'm Roland Martin, coming to you live from the Hope Global Forums in Atlanta. Coming up next on News One Now, a murder-suicide at a San Bernardino, California elementary school is shedding light on a much bigger problem of domestic violence within the black community. We'll talk with an expert about this growing problem. Also, a Cook County judge fatally shot in Chicago as the crime-plagued city continues to deal with a rash of shootings and murders. We'll give you the latest details. Also, if you're a woman looking for advice on how to find success in life, you'll want to hear this panel discussion that was moderated by WNBA President Lisa Borders with three powerful women. I also talked with Lisa about her first year as president of the WNBA. Also, folks, from Etsy to Airbnb to more conventional jobs, a growing number of people in the workforce are independent contractors. We'll talk about what's driving the so-called gig economy. Also, it's Wild Out Wednesday, and we've got comedians Rodney Perry, Marvin Dixon here. Trust me, you know it's going to be wild with those two. Folks, it's time to bring the funk on News One Now on TV One. Let's go.
Just hearing their stories, it's devastating, you guys, devastating. Just the brave teachers, our staff here, we're so close. The parents are so close. The principal, everybody. I mean, it's so emotional for us. We just are devastated.
Parents at North Park Elementary School in San Bernardino, California are understandably still shaken after a murder-suicide there on Monday. Cedric Anderson shot and killed his estranged wife, Karen Smith, an 8-year-old student, and wounded another student before killing himself. Police say the 53-year-old Anderson went to the front office, signed in, then walked to the classroom. He told them he was delivering something to his wife, and then opened fire, reloaded, and started shooting again. Authorities are now shedding even more light on the couple's strained relationship. Smith's family says the mother of four grown children moved out of Anderson's home last month. They say she went into hiding because she was terrified of Anderson. Police say they found a note inside of Anderson's home.
There was not a suicide note found at the house. I will confirm that investigators did find a note that we believe to be his, not completely confirmed, but we believe to be his, that talked about some things that needed closure, feeling disrespected, just that type of stuff, but nothing that would be specifically identified as a suicide note.
Anderson had been arrested for domestic violence in the past. A restraining order alleges he threatened an ex-girlfriend with a butcher knife. His criminal history included four prior arrests dating from 1982 until 2013. Those four arrests included a weapons charge, a domestic violence charge, and a theft charge. Joining me on the phone is Dr. Oliver Williams, the director of the Institute on Domestic Violence in the African American Community. Dr. Williams, first and foremost, we don't know whether or not Anderson's wife told school officials about the issue she was having with her estranged husband. And so when he shows up, they simply allowed him to go to the classroom.
Yeah, it's not unusual for women to not necessarily tell everybody, you know, what's going on. I mean, still there's an issue of shame. You know, even with women who have experienced this problem, sometimes they don't want to mention it to their families. Or, and there are a number of women who've been, you know, harmed or killed who go to college, who haven't told their families about the fact that they've been victimized by their partners. But one issue is, even if she had told the school, how prepared would the school be to be able to respond to it if he did that? So I guess the question is, how prepared are we to deal with this issue as a community, and also as service programs, when oftentimes we don't pay attention to it and we treat it as if it's every time it happens, it's a brand new thing. And when
well, here's a case here, and Dr. Williams, in every case here, I mean, here's a woman who left. She goes into hiding. She does all the appropriate things. How do other women protect themselves from jealous husbands, from abusive husbands who want to do them harm?
I'm not so sure that there's one thing that can protect them from his tendency to be violent towards them. I think oftentimes our society treats domestic violence as though it's an extension of just the conflict. The conflicts are not violence in terms of how oftentimes we think about it. But it's not unusual, too, for women to do all the right things. I was talking to one of your producers last night, and there's this young woman who was killed in Ann Arbor, Michigan. University of Michigan has this annual event where they recognize her the victimization and her loss. But she did all the right things, all the right things. And when she tried to get help, she was killed, and the police got there, and he was still trying to stab her when she was going through this these conditions that she'd done everything like to try to support herself. And the community thought that they did the right thing. But there was more that they could do to respond to it. And one thing is to be aware of it and then also be responsive and try to deal with it in terms of dealing with prevention as well as intervention when the crisis happens.
All right, Dr. Oliver Williams, we surely appreciate it. Thank you so very much.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, folks, let's go to Chicago, where a judge is now one of more than 150 people that have been shot and killed so far this year amid a continuing deadly spate of violence in the Windy City. 66-year-old Cook County Associate Judge Raymond Miles was shot multiple times near his garage in a middle-class Southside neighborhood on Monday in what police are calling a senseless act of violence. Chicago police say just before 5 a.m., the judge's girlfriend walked out of the house and encountered a gunman. The two exchanged words in what police say might have been a robbery attempt. Then the woman was shot in the leg.
Judge Miles exited his residence to investigate. And again, based off of this very preliminary information, they exchanged words with the offender before he was fatally shot multiple times.
When incidents like this occur, it's not only a reminder of the ever-present challenge we have with illegal guns and the offenders willing to use them, but it's also a direct attack on the criminal justice system that keeps our society safe. You have our word that we will not let Judge Miles' life be lost in vain, and we will hold his killer accountable.
Last year, Miles was severely beaten near his home as well. He also has presided over major cases. He was the judge who ordered William Balfour, the estranged brother-in-law of Oscar-winning actress Jennifer Hudson, held without bail in the killing of her mother, brother, and nephew. Balfour was later convicted. Now, police haven't ruled out whether Judge Miles was targeted. Joining us from Chicago via Skype with more, Chicago Defender senior staff writer Mary Datcher. Mary, again, when you look at this judge, he was beaten last year. Any connection between what happened last year and him being shot and killed on Monday?
Good morning, Roland. Actually, from what I'm hearing from my sources, is that this may not be a connection to this particular case. And because of the details that are being discovered and talking to different people along the way, the woman that was approached at that time in the morning, they're saying that it may have been targeted and it may not necessarily have been him. And that's just, you know, the concern that is revolving right now with more information coming in.
And again, what you're dealing with here, I mean, you know, for a judge to be shot and killed is stunning. And again, you know, what are police saying in terms of how they are dealing with this violence in Chicago?
Well, with this particular block, they have lately been having issues with burglaries. It's fairly a quiet block. It's not that far from Chicago State University. It's actually within walking distance. And, you know, he has been a resident over there for years. So his neighbors knew him. He knew his neighbors. They had a routine. Apparently, this was his girlfriend. They work out around this time. So they would leave the home around, you know, 5 a.m. in the morning. So there was a routine in place. And just really when you look at it and where his home is, they said that that particular assailant had waited between the garage and the alley. But as I spoke to more of my sources, you know, it does not piece up with just a random act of violence in this particular case.
All right, Mary Datcher, we sure appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
All right, folks, let's go to Florida. Well, Central Florida State Attorney Aramis Ayala is suing Governor Rick Scott for reassigning 23 of her capital cases because of her decision not to seek the death penalty. Ayala is suing Scott along with the prosecutor who was assigned to her death penalty cases. She wants the court to determine who has authority over the cases, and she wants the court to recognize her as the prosecutor on all 23 cases. Ayala argues removing her from the cases dilutes the power of voters who elected her to the position. She says taking the cases away deprives her of her constitutional rights to due process. Scott also says the allegations are without merit. Let's go to our panel here, LaDon Jones, former Georgia State Representative and attorney, the LBJ Group, Dr. Rashad Ritchie, B103 syndicated radio host and entrepreneur, Minister Vivian Childs, who ran for Congress here in D.C., here in Georgia, and author of Splintered Brokenness in the Political Arena. In this case here with Ayala, I mean, here's a woman elected by the people to make the decisions when it comes to criminal justice matters. She comes to the conclusion that going after folks in the death penalty is virtually useless. Is she right to sue Scott to say, I should be in control of determining what happens in my jurisdiction?
Absolutely. She's not only right, but that is her job as a prosecutor. I was a former prosecutor here in Georgia, and she was, in fact, elected. And she was elected on those principles of not believing in the death penalty. And it's her duty to ensure that what the people elected her to do is exactly right. Cases like this are very difficult, and they have a lot of different factors. And for a governor to step in on what an elected prosecutorial lawyer in this case would decide is a grave overreach.
I think it's a prosecutorial privilege. There is something called prosecution selection. They can select how they would like to do a case, and this governor is overreaching completely.
Vivian, look, I mean, a lot of times you see DAs who decide on a case-by-case basis. She makes a decision that I'm not going to pursue the murder death penalty against any of these cases. What's the difference between making a decision like that as opposed to a case-by-case decision?
I totally agree. If we're going to elect someone to be a judge, then we need to abide by the rulings of her courtroom. And so she's well within her rights, and I think she has a valid case.
I mean, obviously, you have Governor Rick Scott, Republican, who wants to come across as being law and order.
Exactly.
He says that the death penalty, that's the law there in the state of Florida. And here you have someone who laid out a strong case. In fact, when we interviewed her, she said the conversation that she had with Rick Scott, where she tried to explain to him why she made this decision, lasted 25 seconds.
Absolutely.
And then she said, and the governor hung up on her.
Yeah, that sounds like him.
This is also an issue of local control. This woman was locally elected. And as the governor of the state, the only time that he should step in is if there is a conflict of interest or an abuse of the office, and he has to do so under Florida law.
See, Vivian, that's what I don't understand. So Republicans always talk about local control, local control. Well, here is an elected DA who says, this is how I want to proceed. But then the governor decides to say, no, I'm going to intervene in your jurisdiction and reassign your cases. What happened to local control?
Absolutely. I hear exactly what you're saying. But there again, people do different things for different reasons. I'm not sure why he thought he would make that decision. But again, the truth of the matter is she has every right to take control of her courtroom.
And what we're seeing is that Ayala is another example of, again, a lot of these black DAs who are being elected across the country who are bringing a social justice attitude to the DA's office. And so you have Marilyn Mosby, of course, in Baltimore.
Right.
You have the new DA in Cook County. You have a new DA in Cuyahoga County in Cleveland. The same thing, other DAs across the country. And so I think we're going to see more examples of this where you have socially conscious DAs who are being elected by the people to fulfill the mandates they voted for them for.
Absolutely. The good news is there is a huge gubernatorial election about to occur in Florida, and there are some great Democratic primaries. We do not want to set a precedent, and hopefully by this overreach, the people of Florida will come up and elect a governor that will ensure that these kind of overreaches don't occur anymore.
All right then, folks, hold tight 1 second. Coming up next on News One Now, you'll meet three women who've empowered themselves and have advice for women wanting to do the same. Lisa Borders reflects on, also Lisa Borders, who of course moderated that panel. She reflects on her first year as WNBA president and discusses how the league has merged activism and athletics. Also later in the show, we'll hear from our wild comedians. We got Marvin Dixon, Rodney Perry. Many of you know their work on the comedy stage. They will be right here on News One Now TV One, broadcasting live from the Hope Global Forums here in Atlanta. Back in a moment.
So you want the truth. Well, we got it.
That's how I talk. God knows it. I'm just straight.
It's News One Now with Roland Martin.
Folks, there are a number of powerful panels taking place here at the Hope Global Forums here in Atlanta. One of those yesterday really focused on how do you empower girls and women. It was a power-packed panel, and we want to share some of that with you.
So what I would say is we are also in a political environment that is not necessarily female friendly. And if it's not female friendly, it's not family friendly. And if it's not family friendly, it's not community friendly. So is this a good political environment? Oh God, this is gonna take me a minute, ladies, I'm just saying. We're gonna keep working on this. Women hold up at least half the sky, or as my mother used to say, her name is Gloria, we call it the gospel according to Gloria. Women hold up almost the entire sky. This is not to the exclusion of men, but suffice it to say that women do not always enjoy having their voices heard at every table as part of the greater community and the ecosystem we call humanity. And so we have some work to do there. Each one of these wonderful panelists is going to share her perspective on the work that's being done and the work to be done.
How many of you have taken a role or applied for a job when you had less than half of the qualifications necessary for the job? How many of you have actually done that?
All
right, about 20%. Now, if the statistics are true for men, that number is if they have at least 60% of the qualifications, they'll apply. For women, that number is almost 100%. Women don't want to dive into the deep end unless they have the experience. I spent many years in technology, very fortunate to market technology products around the globe. And then I talked to Bill Rogers at SunTrust Banks. And I learned the value that bankers bring to the world. And I learned that I could make a much bigger impact in a bank, especially a bank like SunTrust Bank, because we give people their first mortgages. That would be me.
Oh. Susan holds my mortgage.
Her mortgage. We give them their first cars to get to work and help them save for their kids' educations. And so I felt that was the best place for me. And I urge women to continue looking throughout your career until you find the best place for you.
Well, Donna, Susan talked about perceptions. And in the business you're in, your PR and branding and design, your agency today, but before this, you were at Calvin Klein for a long time, and that's about image, and that's about perceptions. Can you talk a little bit about that industry, but also why that has not always been good for women?
Sure. When I became the senior art director at Calvin Klein, I was 27 years old. And Calvin was going broke, and that we really needed to reinvigorate the lingerie underwear part of the business.
I never knew Calvin was ever going broke, but okay.
Yeah, it was bad times. And so we brought in Kate Moss and Marky Mark, and you know, that was really a part of, I was a big part of that Gen X part of the company. And and the whole company turned around because suddenly we were really reflective of pop culture as opposed to being kind of about Greek gods and goddesses. Mm. And so I, retouched Kate Moss to make her skinnier, and I retouched Marky Mark to make him look even better. And I did those things because I, quite frankly, didn't know any better.
What Grameen America does is give loan capital, non-recourse loans to women in poverty in this country. And we give the access to capital. We help them be banked. We think it's very important. Half of all female headed households are unbanked in the United States of America in 2017.
Wait, say it again.
Half of all female headed households are not banked in the USA in 2017. And so when you look at that, we feel that it's important not only to give them access to loan capital, but also make sure that they are banked and build a credit score. The average woman at Grameen America walks away after 26 weeks with an average credit score from either none or a poor credit score because of primarily bad education on credit cards. She can walk away with a 640 plus credit score, which is life-changing to her.
I was married to a man that I subsequently divorced, but he signed me up for a bunch of credit cards that I didn't know anything about. Yeah, everybody suck your breath in. You know this has happened to somebody else out here before. So suffice it to say, he ran up those credit cards and ultimately had to file bankruptcy. And it hit my credit score, which was 800 when I married him. Mm. When I found out, because I didn't check my credit score regularly, which you should do with all the identity fraud, my credit score was somewhere in the high fives, low sixes, from 800, mind you. Because employers now use your credit score to help determine whether you will be a good employee. Painful, painful. And it has taken almost 5 years to get back, somebody say amen, to 789.
For women in particular, it's really critical to get financially confident, because once you do that, you're confident in other areas of your life. And if you're not, it prevents you. Now, when I say financially confident, and credit scores are a key part of being financially confident, people think that means you have to have a high net worth, and it doesn't. People say, I don't make enough money to be financially confident. That's not what financial confidence is about. And I can tell you that with certainty, because at SunTrust, we interviewed literally tens of thousands of women and looked at their path to financial confidence and looked at how you get there across all income levels. And when you get there, it's a feeling of control and confidence over your finances. It doesn't mean you have enough money, whatever you think enough is. It means you know what's coming in, you know what's coming out, and you have a plan.
All right, folks, as we come back on News One Now, live from Atlanta, the Hope Global Forums, we'll talk with Lisa Borders, who moderated that panel, a women's panel on yesterday. She, of course, is the president of the WNBA. What is in store for women's basketball? Well, she'll tell us. That's next right here, News One Now on TV One.
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
All right, folks, the Hope Global Forums here in Atlanta yesterday held a panel discussion hosted by, you just saw it, WNBA President Lisa Borders. And after the conversation, I had a chance to talk with her about her first year as WNBA President. Take a listen.
All right, Lisa, first year under your belt as president of the WNBA, how was it? It was fantastic. It was our 20th year, a historic season, and even though we are less than a generation old, the traction that we've been able to get has been substantial. There are 12 teams all across the country, 144 of the best athletes in the world. We captured a sixth gold medal last year at the Olympics, so it was a year marked with amazing milestones.
And obviously, I mean, this is different than what you've done in the past.
It is different, but it's very much the same. Every role I've ever had the opportunity to lead and to participate, it's been helping those who were disenfranchised. So if you think back, this is women. Women are not receiving the same pay as men are. Women are not always able to have a career in professional sports. If you go back to my Grady days, it was those who were disenfranchised and didn't have adequate health care. In public service, it was those whose voices were not clearly heard or who were not at the table. So actually, there's a theme to my career, even though I've had the privilege of working in all three sectors, public, private, and nonprofit. I am always seeking to help those who cannot help themselves or who haven't reached their full potential.
You also, though, had to deal with a tough test early on, dealing with protesters and Black Lives Matter and T-shirts as well. And so talk about what leagues now have to contend with by having a new generation of athletes who are very much, who are social media savvy, who are very much about social activism, and they want that to be a part of their job as athletes.
Right. Roland, you make a great point. Our league was the first team sport to actually deal with a social issue. We can think back to Muhammad Ali, but he was an individual person in boxing, and he expressed his views on the Vietnam War, and they took his belt. He was a champion at the time. These athletes are no different. They have better tools at their disposal. So social media allows for the democratization of voices. They get to speak on any and every topic that they deem appropriate. So we recognize that our athletes play basketball. They play it incredibly well. That's what they do. That's not who they are. Who they are is folks who want to contribute to the community beyond the professional work that they do. So I see this younger generation as one who is completely engaged in their community. They go to work every day like you and I, and that happens to be the hardwood in the different arenas around the country. But they are equally impacted and have opinions about what's going on in the world around them. So we celebrate our athletes and their desire to participate fully in America.
One of the things that we talk about the future, there were a lot of people who watch Connecticut play Mississippi State. Right. Lots of discussion on social media. Then, of course, the championship game. How do you take the WNBA and go to the next level where you really get sports fans, period, not just young women, not just adult women, to say, look, these are professional athletes. You should be just as excited watching their game as watching men play.
Right. So that's a great question. As we watched Mississippi State play UConn, that was an upset. So in sports, people are always looking for the unpredictable. That's exciting. That gets your adrenaline going. The same thing is true when South Carolina played Mississippi State. People wanted to see, could Mississippi State maintain that momentum. Clearly, South Carolina tipped the scales and won. That team was and is led by Dawn Staley, one of the most decorated former WNBA players in history. So what we think we need to do is greater connect the college game with the professional game. People who are sports fans, but people who love basketball specifically. And if you look at the ratings for that night, Roland, Friday night, that game was up against our Warriors, who were playing other professional leagues, and they outpaced them on that night. The same thing was true with the finals game on Sunday. The final game of the Women's Final Four outpaced opening day for the Chicago Cubs. These are facts. So it clearly demonstrates that people are paying attention. The college game, we believe, is one of the tipping points for women's basketball. So we recognize that our talent pool, the source of our talent, comes from the college game. There should be a really good connection between college and professional. So we are targeting young people, girls and boys, young women and young men, to be sports fans and basketball sports fans first among equals.
All right, cool. All right, it's good to see you. Thanks a bunch.
Great to be here. I want everybody to come out and watch us as we tip off on May the 13th. I want you to be there too.
Well, I'm waiting for a franchise to come back to Houston. Only the most decorated franchise in WNBA history.
Thank you so much. Great to be with you.
I appreciate it. That's right. Always representing Houston. Houston Comets, of course, won 4 WNBA championships. They were definitely the best team ever in the league. What about that, though? It's very interesting to me. You saw, as I said, asked her, you saw all of this talk, all of these folks who were watching the Women's Final Four in college, but you still have this attitude that folks don't want to watch women's basketball.
I think it is, we're seeing this through all of what's going on in current news. Women are still not quite receiving the level of respect. They're not considered as athletes in the same way. They're not paid the same amount. And it is one of those things that I think is just built in the American system. It's going to be hard to get around.
Viv, go ahead.
Let me keep it 100. I had not been to a WNBA game until about 2 years ago.
Right.
And I was skeptical. When I went because of my job. And so I went out there.
So
and
why were you skeptical?
I was skeptical because I never experienced the level of athleticism that the WNBA can offer. I've never experienced it up close, okay? So I wasn't a big basketball guy, period. Definitely not a big WNBA guy. When I went there, it was the most fun I had in years. And the athleticism of these women, remarkable. They played their hearts out. So I'm a fan now. So now I actually go to the games. But it took me having that one-time experience.
Vivian, you a WNBA fan?
Actually, I played basketball in high school. So I love basketball. I was.
What position you played?
I was on defense. And that was
way back
in the day. Oh, yes.
She specialized in
way
blocking.
Way back in the day.
So you absolutely are telling folks they should check out the WNBA.
Absolutely. But you know what? You know, we're slow to things. But like tennis has turned around because of those dynamic women in tennis, basketball is coming.
Okay. All right, then. Living trying to be a hooper. All right, y'all. Coming up next, News One Now. Independent contracting is on the rise among American workers. We'll talk about what's driving what is called the gig economy. Plus, while not Wednesday, you know we've been in Atlanta, so we might as well have some Atlanta comedians in the house. Folks, we're looking forward to having them here. You know it's going to be time for Loads of Laughs. All of that's next. News One Now. TV
the
One.
First step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with Roland Martin. Roland Martin.
Chances are you've dealt with an Uber or Lyft driver or someone who works for Airbnb. They are independent contractors or freelancers. They represent a growing number of Americans who are choosing that route of employment even in more traditional jobs. The growth of independent contractors is fueling the so-called gig economy. Joining me right now is Christopher Kai, founder and CEO of the Matham Group, also still with our panel here, LaDon Jones, Rashad Ritchie, and Minister Vivian Childs. Christopher, let's talk about this here. So some of us call it a side hustle. Mm-hmm. Some of us call it, you know, that extra job. But again, people are looking, realizing that they have X amount of time in a day, and they're saying, I can do more than my regular job, so why not go to my side hustle?
Yeah. I mean, a third of the working population, Roland, in the U.S. have some kind of gig capacity. And whether they're Uber, Lyft, I mean, let's say the average American only has about $1,000 in their savings, 69%, but like the Airbnb, they make about $6,000 a year. So for me, I created an online training program where I teach entrepreneurs how to become global speakers. And so they can choose to work part-time, full-time, but it gives you this a massive ability of flexibility.
Well, it's interesting because, again, for so long we heard about bed and breakfasts. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden Airbnb comes out. Now you have people who are renting out their homes, apartments, condos, you name it, because they're not always there. And that company now is worth what?
I don't know how much they're worth, but a lot of them are billionaires, and they have 150 million users, 150 million around the world.
Okay, so somebody who's sitting out there watching right now, and so they want to go that route. You know, what are you telling them they need to do? Because it's not just so simple as, okay, I'll just rent out my place, or I'll just go ahead and just start driving for Uber.
Well, the thing is, like with Airbnb, I mean, you just find out if you have a room or an apartment or a house, look at other listings on Airbnb, and just look at how they approach posting their house, because at the core, it is your house, right? So you need to be careful, but there's various reviews out there, so it just allows you to just find extra income. I have a friend that does very well for himself, covers his entire mortgage, just Airbnb his two rooms in his house.
Really?
In Los Angeles.
Now, hold up. So you said rooms. Is he there when they're there?
He's on the second floor with his girlfriend, and then on the bottom floor, he has two rooms that he rents out.
Let me help y'all out. Roland ain't doing that. Just letting y'all know right now. Okay, who has a question? Rashad, we'll go to you because you got about 18 side hustles. You probably have just under the number that I have. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I try to be. All right, so I'm from the hood, so everything is a hustle for me. When it comes to the Airbnb, the Lyft, the Uber, are they monetizing enough for the time that they have to spend doing those types of side gigs?
Well, again, it depends on how much they do it. Sometimes they do it for a few hours, but it gives you the flexibility, right? So I'm in Los Angeles. A lot of these actors and actresses, you know, they just have more time for some, you know, monetary income. I mean, some supplemental income, right? But again, the gig economy isn't just about Airbnb and Lyft. It's like I have an online training program. I have a lot of clients that are coaches online. They speak around the world. So it's just really about independent contract gigs. So it's not a 9-to-5 job, which is traditional. It's about, well, when do you want to work? How do you want to work? Where do you want to work?
I wonder, though, is there a way for people to know and be prepared for changing laws? Here in Georgia, they just recently changed a law that's going to require Uber and Lyft drivers to pay certain taxes. And that's one of a handful of states. And the laws are starting to catch up. How do people get into the gig economy but protect themselves?
Well, at the core, it's about really just researching what's online. And Uber and Airbnb, they're all constantly being bombarded by various laws. So it's really about reaching out to them and making sure that what the laws are. And it's about just, it is changing rapidly.
Vivian?
You know, I'm interested also, you know, being an author, I guess that's my sidekick, if you want to call it that. But I ride a lot of Uber. So, and I was thinking the same question that she had just asked. How would that affect the price that we're paying now for Uber with the regulations that are coming forward?
Yeah, I mean, this is like a global thing. You know, this protest in Paris and UK. So for me, I speak more on the overarching gig economy. But at the core, it's changing so much that answer, I don't even know if Uber can answer that.
So what are you advising people? So there's somebody sitting out there who's watching right now. They're listening. They say, okay, I want to do something along these lines. What's that process to go through in terms of this is the best thing for me? So whether it's Uber, whether it's Lyft, whether it's Airbnb, what other type of gig economy jobs that are out there as well?
So you look at something like Udemy or Lynda.com. Udemy has 20,000 instructors online, teaching 45,000 classes to 15 million students. Now, 15 million students are more
and it's
than
called
the
Udemy.
Udemy, Udemy.com. It's an online education platform. So, if you wanted to teach on your book, you could, and charge a fee for it.
Or let's say, you know, we're television production, teaching people how to shoot video.
Yeah. Or okay. I teach people how to become a speaker, or an online coach. So, you as an author, you can, you know, find better gigs online because I sit in my home office in Beverly Hills. I'm talking to 200 people on a webinar. They like my programs, they buy it online. That's never been possible ever, like, until like now, because the online training space is $107 billion. So anyone that wants their side hustle.
Oh, the online training space is $107 billion?
Wow. $107 billion with a B.
Not bad.
That'll get your attention.
I like
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
But does this economy give millennials some type of advantage over the older generation? And
hell
is
no.
it sustainable?
Again, remember, if I'm sitting in my home office and I'm staring at my computer screen doing a webinar with 200 people from around the world, anyone can do that. And if you're older, you have more experience. So
right.
the bottom line is you're teaching someone a solution that they might have that is solving their problem.
Well, see, that's the key there, and I think that's one of the mistakes. So you have millennials who might know the technology, but they don't have the history, they don't have the actual knowledge. And so the key, though, for those folks who are in their 40s and 50s to not be afraid of the technology and then say, wait a minute, I possess something that I've accrued over 20 and 30 years and it's just sitting there.
Yeah, like I have a client, he's had 58 companies in the last 30 years, he's raised $500 million, he's in his 50s. He's loving this because it allows him to reach people he's never had a chance to reach.
All right then. Well, look, how can we get more information, Christopher?
My website is christophkai.com. Last name is K-A-I.
All right there, man. We appreciate it. Thanks a bunch.
Thank you.
And for this call, the gig economy. And I'm all down for the side hustle. All right then, to our panel, I appreciate it as well. Thank you so very much. Coming up next is Wild Out Wednesday. We've got Rodney Perry, Marvin Dixon, Vanessa Fraction, Ronnie Jordan all in the house. I wonder what they got to say about the United Airlines drama. And also the governor of Alabama, who no longer has his job. Why? Because he had a side piece, not a side hustle. That's next. News 1 Now, TV 1, broadcasting live from Atlanta, the Hope Global Forums. Back in a moment.
Your centerpiece for black thoughts in America.
I don't bend, I don't break.
It's News One Now with Roland Martin.
All right, folks, welcome back to News One Now, broadcasting live from the Hope Global Forums here in Atlanta. You hear lots of the music playing back here, so what's going on? And they're setting up because their first session starts at 8 a.m. And so that's in 13 minutes, and so it's all good. Right now, folks, because we have Wild Not Wednesday, where we have our comedians on the show, and so being here in Atlanta, we said, what the heck, let's talk with some folks who are here. I was with these folks, nearly everybody. So who wasn't on the time to join the crew?
I was not on the cruise. You got to turn. I ain't turned 40 yet. So
you were not on it. You said you ain't turned 40 yet. Oh, that mean y'all can't afford to go.
No, wow. Sure, definitely.
Okay,
for sure.
Gotcha. All right then. Yeah. So we got Rodney Perry to my left.
Yeah, man.
We got Marvin Dixon.
Yes, he.
Vanessa Fraction. And we have Ronnie Jordan.
Yeah,
yes, sir.
Very funny.
All right, folks. So there's a bunch of stuff I want to talk about. But okay. First of all, I got to deal with the governor of Alabama. A homie just resigned.
Yeah.
Because he had a side piece. He lied about it. He claimed he never had sex, lying. But here's what got me.
You said lying. Like, who don't lie about
it? No. It's even worse. They had a relationship, but they never had sex.
Oh, no,
but they were texting each other saying how much they loved each other, how much they missed each other. But this is how dumb this fool is. This fool had his text messages linked to his wife's iPad.
No, he didn't.
Men don't know technology.
He don't really know how to work the iPad.
And the man probably still got a beeper rolling.
I mean, come on.
He don't keep up with technology.
First of all, I don't know. I probably got mine linked to my wife's iPad, too. But then you just don't have no side chick. Just stop, dog.
He looked a little too old for a side chick.
No, the key is.
But he ran on his faith, morals and values, and then the church where they both attended said they're no longer members. Shocking.
Really?
Well, you know, them crickets are tricky. You know, he probably had a jitterbug or one of those older people phones that his niece or somebody had to set up.
He got a trap phone.
Yeah, he got a trap phone and he didn't know. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, some people, he's probably still on Black Planet right now. You know. Yeah.
So you never get caught with a flip phone.
You never get caught.
The new phones, all the droids, you get caught with the iPhones and all that.
No, I know. Trust me. There are several athletes who I know.
Come on, dog.
And they said, oh, no, I got a flip phone.
Trap phone.
They don't set their voicemails up. The text messages are short. You can't see. I'm just being honest.
I'm starting to realize how many times I've been a side piece. Apparently, I didn't know. I thought that was his real phone.
So you were dating a lot of guys with flip phones?
Well, he pulled it out one time. He just said that was his other phone.
Well,
like,
I'm
going to
come clean right now.
That was his other phone?
Me and Oprah been together for a while, so. She got a flip phone, too.
But any man with technology, your wife knows all your passwords. Yeah. Just don't even try it. Like, your wife knows your PIN number.
Your wife knows your social security number.
Everything. She can get transcripts.
Y'all need to pass notes.
Your wife right now know your social security
number. She know your passcode, Instagram, everything. You think she don't know. She knows.
Actually, she don't. Yes, and I don't know hers, and I don't care.
Unless you keep changing it every 30
days. Watch something happen today. You got something going to pop up on your timeline. She's going to show you
she got it.
Knock
yourself out. Go ahead and try to see if you can get in my account.
First of all, don't argue with Roland.
He's a professional.
First of all, I don't understand. Like, I don't understand the concept of you all freaking out work and you going through somebody's email.
I don't agree with that. I have never done that.
I don't do it either.
They say when you look for something, you're going to find.
That's right.
Let me tell you something.
So I'm happy. I just want to say
if you're
happy.
Not going to your man's social media, then you don't love him.
Well, I don't have a man. That's what I'm saying. That's probably why I'm not going through nobody.
I'm like you, Vanessa.
I actually don't have a man. I just try to say that on TV so I sound better. But I really don't go through anybody's things. I have nobody's things to go through.
Right, I don't understand these people who go through somebody's social media account. Why you like her photo? You got that much time in your life?
But the fact
it sounds like y'all had this argument this morning.
It does sound like it's a little personal.
But the fact Instagram got that in there as a feature, that was a hater move in the programming stage anyway. It was a woman invented that part. You know you should put who liked what. And they just did it.
Yeah,
and it gotta be a little hard.
That's a hater move. Why would you do that? Why would you
like nobody go through my junk drawer? You know, you got your drunk drawer with your soy sauce and stuff. Let me go through that. Ask me if you need a soy sauce. Don't just go in there.
That ketchup is for me.
Don't just go in there.
That's where the Polynesian sauce is kept in my house. You know,
I got to ask y'all, all of y'all, of course, just like just make me fly a lot.
Yeah.
United is having a rough week.
Ooh, yes. Oh, Lord.
Woo!
I can't
even
we'll
throw
it.
You off the plane.
They will put you off the plane. They
I didn't know what happened
the
first
time myself.
Really?
Yeah, I flies on Delta. And they'll throw you off too. This is the thing. When they ask you to move, just move.
Just move. You know, it's on the ticket.
No.
Yes, it is on that ticket now.
If he paid for it, why should he move?
Because they overbook and they put
that's
that
not
on
his fault.
There.
But that's your fault.
So
that's
why don't
you? Why are you yelling?
You asking why do they overbook? Right, he did get very upset.
No, if I pay for a ticket,
right.
Don't come to me and say, we overbooked. That's your damn problem.
That's your fault.
But it's in the fine print that they can do that because they overbook because people cancel.
Vanessa, let me ask you something.
Yes, sugar.
You've been to a football game.
I have, sugar.
Mm. Basketball.
I have.
You right. got your seat assigned.
I've got my seat.
Supposed to say, hey, we overbooked. You need to get up and leave
That's
the game.
That's not in the fine print at the arena. If it was in the fine print at the arena, I'd get up and go watch it on the TV. It's not in the fine print. My thing is this with the gentleman because I was picturing myself in that situation. I'm thinking, what did you expect them to do? You just going to sit there and say, I'm not going to move?
Hell yes. That man was a doctor.
And that's the thing. They keep trying to throw in he was a doctor. I don't care if he was a
PE teacher. 9/11, if somebody asks you to do something on a plane,
a director.
You do it.
No,
yes. Period.
Well, I'm like,
and then you settle it afterwards. You settle it afterwards.
I honestly was on the airline, and they randomly picked my name.
Yes.
I had to get off the plane.
Yes.
But they gave me $1,000.
Yes, they do.
They gave me $1,000 voucher and put me on another flight. Because I was trying to fly to Miami. I said, can y'all switch me to Fort Lauderdale? And they flew me to Fort Lauderdale.
And see,
but
the
what
thing
you got
is,
surgeries to do? He said
and
he
that's
had
what
surgeries
he said.
To perform.
But see,
like,
I say that too when they try to put me off the plane. I'm like, I'm a doctor. I got some surgeries I got to do tomorrow.
Vanessa.
Rolling. My initials, MD.
Who the hell would believe that one?
Look at my dress. I don't look like a doctor to you.
You look like a doctor.
I'm looking at your nose ring. I'm looking at your nose ring.
This was a surgical procedure. My nose ring was a surgical procedure. There
well,
is
the
one.
Young lady had a crossover in the last segment, but she didn't look like she still was hooping.
Well, Roland, my initials MD.
They are.
Marvin
Dixon.
Mad Dog.
I didn't know what the tape was. I just saw him dragging him off. I was like, damn, he must have wanted a seatbelt extension.
No, I'm going to tell you what I hate about the whole
thing. I didn't know what was going on. I thought it
Let
was,
me
I was
tell you
like,
what I hate
damn.
About the whole thing. When they wrong, but they're going to try to bring up some stuff in his past
right.
to try to defame him, and I don't like that.
What they bring up in doctor's past?
They said he was a gambler. He got a little side piece.
But I love all the tweets where they said, well, let's bring up United's past.
Yeah.
Why?
Like, let's
but
bring
know
up
one
y'all
thing
stuff.
I will defend United on? United, if you hear me, I need a free pass for defending y'all on this. Now, look, the leggings situation. I was very upset that they agreed that we could wear leggings on the flight because you've seen the situation with the two women. This is another United thing
where
it was like the two young women was on a buddy pass and they were wearing leggings. Now, I understand for employees,
I'm
there is a dress code. I know you're pro-legging, but the issue is that's a very thin piece of material. Exactly.
I'm like, y'all,
You got to cancel across the board.
It's not leggings, it's compression pants.
Boy.
It's good for you.
It's called
put some pants on. Because let me tell you something. We are in Atlanta, Georgia, and if you do not make an across-the-board thing that there is no leggings, there's some gentlemen that'll get on with some leggings.
Hey, and it's nice on here.
It's so nice.
This is cool.
Where we going to get peanuts?
United can squash all that with one thing.
What?
Round trip anywhere for $50.
That's how they going to come back.
Then they going to call Spirit.
That's right. If you ever book me on Spirit, I'm gonna cuss you out and dog you on every chance I can get.
I like Southwest. You just gotta run Southwest. And get your seat. It's like the
club.
Just let the gate up and run in there. Like,
but here's what I understand with Southwest. This is what gets me. If you in the C group, ain't no being space left.
Ain't no being space.
So stop going. I can't put my bag up. Your ass didn't check in early. You were in the C group.
Remember Southwest used to have the seats. They face each other. I thought that was the old limo style.
You was running through the airport with OJ.
They had an ashtray on the armrest.
you pre 9/11 with that, bro.
All
right, let me go to a break. I'll be back on News 1 Now in 60 seconds. Here from Atlanta. Back in a moment.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with Roland Martin. Roland Martin.
Birthday shout out time. Actress Trinity Stokes, known for her role in Casey Undercover, turns 11. I ain't never heard of her. Yeah. TV personality Claudia Jordan, she was on a cruise last week. She turned 44. That girl lives in the casino.
Oh, yes, she does.
And President of South Africa, Jacob Zuma, turns 75. Okay, so real quick, we'll start on the far side. Ronan, where you performing next?
Next, I will be in Denver, Colorado, 422 at a. In Denver, and I'm doing a couple I'm on my college tour, the Campus Royalty Tour, so check my social media.
All right, Lakeisha, where you performing next?
Lakeisha.
That's what you on
Lakeisha.
Right now, see?
Vanessa,
you know what? They always do to women dirty. I don't know what's up with that. I'm going to be in New York starting on Friday. It's for a personal trip, but I'll be doing a couple clubs as well. What, Roland?
It's for a personal trip.
It
damn.
Is. You
okay, Marvin.
Lord, what?
I'm in Fort Pierce this Friday, and May 6th, I'm starting my new comedy venture in South Florida at the Dania Beach Casino, so make sure y'all check that out.
Hey, brand new comedy club, Jacksonville, Florida. I'm coming to see you next week in Jacksonville, Florida. Go to the website, RodneyPerry.com, for all the information.
Roland, I want to personally thank you for having all us on here.
Thank you, brother.
Because I really thought it was going to be an unsung.
Yeah.
So TV One got me. I thought it was going to be an unsung episode.
Ronnie Jordan
for
you
my
something.
Man or something, or for Ronnie. My woman.
He bought you something.
Ronnie, what are you doing? We still on
he
TV.
You
okay, I'm like, he reaching behind the chair.
Hey, man, I'm,
okay, let's see.
He got you a 2X.
That's the name of my comedy
tour. AF.
Blessed and fearless, blessed and funny.
Oh, God, okay. I'm about to say. About to question,
I thought it was something else.
I'm about to question your tithing.
Well,
okay, all right. Let's see here. Real quick, let me open this up. Okay, where is it? Same thing.
Oh, yeah. I have that brand. I wear it often.
Hey,
blessed and fearless. Ronnie Jordan.
All the comedians is wearing it.
You got the big man Jordan logo on the back.
And you know it.
That's my body.
All right, y'all. Tomorrow, News One Now, part one of my interview with baseball legend Hank Aaron.
Wow.
Plus, Mayor Cassine Reed of Atlanta also joining us. All right, y'all. I got to go. Holla!
Your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America.
I don't bend, I don't break.
It's News One Now with Roland Martin.